Welcome to the Church Scattered Podcast. My name is Chris Bell. I'm here with Dan Greer, and we have two other team members for Church Scattered, Blake Stanley, Noel Fenderson, and together we are a team and a group, a network, all about the Church Scattered. And what we mean by that is the everyday living out of Christianity in the 21st century. And what we want to do is come alongside Christians, believers, in their homes, their businesses, and their churches to live out Christianity in a vibrant and a powerful way in all of those different environments. That's what this is all about. We have a book that just came out. We have a network we're rolling out, and we're doing podcasts and Facebook Lives and webinars and the whole deal, all in an effort to try to get the church, and not just the building, obviously, but the people prepared for this century. We're really excited about that. Dan, great to have you on the podcast again today as we dive into today, chapter 3 of the book, and it's all about disruption. So as we dive in, just so we can kind of set the parameter here, Dan, when we say disruption, what do we mean?
Well, the biggest factor, Chris, is when disruption occurs, it is such a massive amount of change that it really produces a situation where you can't return to what you normally were doing before it happened. It requires not a realignment or a small adjustment. It literally requires transformation. And so we obviously are at a period where there are so many things that are being disrupted at one time. But the challenge for a leader is don't try to go back to where you were. You need to really maintain what is essential from where you were, and you need to adjust to what's going to be most effective moving forward. So it just requires transformation, not realignment.
Okay. So in podcast number 2, we looked at the idea of disruption through the cultural lens. And we see that happening in just incredible, unprecedented ways right now. The disruption is undeniable. But I think maybe if we're not careful, the church could let this disruption idea pass us by. We could say, well, it's a worldwide disruption, but we're still the church. We're still going to be who we are. And we're not saying the church shouldn't be who they are. We're saying the church is going to have to change how we do things. And the disruption around us is going to require that. In chapter 3, we talk about, a very important word, and it's the idea of a scorecard. I know when I go play a round of golf, and you play golf too, Dan, and you're a much better golfer than me, my scorecard is not much to look at. You know, it's pretty bad. You don't have to say anything right now because you know this is true. But when it comes to the church, I think our scorecard has to change. And historically, and again, we want listeners to understand that we're in the boat with them. We're not up on the shore pointing at everyone. Like, we've lived this. I am a pastor here at Three Circle Church, a mega church in coastal Alabama, and I have made these mistakes, the scorecard mistake. And Dan, I think typically in the evangelical world, the scorecard has been how many people do we have in the building? How are people giving? We call it, you know, giving units, those types of things. People in the building, brand, you know, how well known is our church, all those kinds of things. And what we're saying in the book, what we're challenging, is that that has to change for the church to be effective in the 21st century. Why, Dan, is the scorecard change going to be so crucial to the future of the church?
Well, the sad reality, Chris, and I think everybody knows this, it's nothing new, but the results of the current scorecard for the last 50 years have been declining at a very rapid pace. So the bottom line is, we're shooting 130 on the golf course, not 80. So the church is failing, and we've known this for quite some time. The numbers are going down across all denominations, and it literally has brought us to the point today where a third of the churches in North America need hospice care. They're just simply not going to make it. Another third of the churches are plateaued, and we celebrate people like Tom Rainer that are trying to revitalize Absolutely. And replant those churches. And,
yes.
But he says that 9 out of 10 churches in North America are either declining in attendance or they're not growing as fast as their community. So that, wow. that group of churches, if something doesn't transform quickly, they're going to need hospice care. And so The scorecard says maybe up to about a third of the churches are actually growing. And, you know, we've got to get to a place where more churches are growing and effective in reaching people for Christ. And so the question really drives home the point that we have not been effective for at least 50 years in making disciples. We have been effective in other metrics, whether it could be some churches in growth in attendance, or it could be the number of church plants. There are a lot of other numbers that, quote, keep going up. But at the end of the day, they're not making disciples. It's more about transfer growth. The sad reality about church planting is the numbers can go up, but the number of those churches that are viable a year after they're planted are very small. So we've got to really look at the big picture, confront the brutal facts that we're not successful by any measure on the scorecard that we have globally, and that's going to force us to change the scorecard at the local church level as well.
I totally agree. And one thing, you know, when we look at it, the problem with having the wrong scorecard is in the end, you can have great, you know, and you see this in the sports world, especially if you have a great individual athlete who's all about the accolades individually and not the team. You end up with not a lot of championships, but really great numbers. So you can take football, you can have a running back with the most yards and a quarterback with the most passes. You know, I'm a big Saints fan, and over the years, you know, Drew Brees every year is numerically probably the best quarterback in the league, and yet other people are winning the Super Bowls. And it's because the team, you know, it was kind of a different scorecard. And you look at a Tom Brady with the Patriots, and his scorecard has always been, I don't care about accolades. I want that trophy at the end of the year. And I think when it comes to the church, if we're not careful, we will look, to your point, like we're winning because of certain metrics. But if we're not looking at the goal, and to us, I think the trophy would be, are we making disciples, right?
Yes. And Church Scattered is fully integrated, as you said at the beginning, in a great setup that we want to help individual Christians grow and live out their faith every day. We want leaders both in the church context and in corporate life to be effective as well. The best illustration I can give in corporate America today to this same issue is they've fallen in love with top-line revenue. And so if you have 100 subways and you're really doing well, it's assumed that bigger is better. So why don't we set a goal for 500 subways in the next 10 years?
Right.
The only problem is with that goal, top line revenue is increasing, but bottom line profit is not because you're having to borrow so much capital to build all those restaurants, your profit's going down. And in church life, attendance is the same dynamic as top-line revenue. It's assumed the more you have, the better you are.
Right.
But if profitability is the bottom-line metric on the scorecard in corporate America, disciple-making is the bottom-line metric for churches. And we've been looking at the wrong number.
Right.
And we've been assuming that bigger is better, and it's not. We're not accomplishing our mission.
Man, that's really good. And again, I'm in the boat. I mean, I look at my own life and my own ministry, and I've often looked at the wrong numbers. And that's why I'm so excited as a pastor. And I think it needs to be said, you said it earlier, our hope is that we take the one-third of churches that are growing, and we stretch that across those other two-thirds. We don't want to see churches die. And we also don't want to see churches stagnant. So you and I both have committed our lives in many ways to the local church, and we love the local church. So this isn't us beating up on the church. It's us saying we love the local church so much. We see this disruption happening, and if we don't take it seriously, we're going to become ineffective and maybe worse than ineffective. What if that hospice care goes from one-third to two-thirds? Now we have a real problem, and our challenge in the book is that we see that happening if changes are not made. You point out in the book a major disruptive truth, Dan, and it's this, that Jesus, the founder, the owner, and the leader of the church, is undoubtedly disrupting it all the way down to the foundations. So what we see is that God is actually disrupting things now, his hand. If we believe he's sovereign in all things. But you point out in the book, this is a historically consistent idea with God. We see it in the scriptures. What are some times in the Bible where we see God disrupting things for his own people, ultimately for their good?
Well, gosh, you know, we can go all the way back to the flood and, you know, major disruption because of, you know, really the people on the earth not willing to follow God and the truth of his word. And, you know, we can see all through the Old Testament between the judges and the kings, these vicious cycles of the people of God would repent and be obedient only to eventually fall away and not be representing God, you know, well to the rest of the world. And so judgment would come, persecution would come. We get in another cycle of repentance and obedience, and we get a better king or a better judge. And then all the way through, you know, the New Testament in the book of Acts, you know, at the very beginning, you know, things are going extremely well post-resurrection with Pentecost and the empowering of the Holy Spirit, the Great Commission. But again, by chapter 8, everybody's hanging around Jerusalem. You know, the founder of the church sends persecution to scatter the people again to get them on mission to reach the Gentiles. And so you're right. It is not a new idea. And I think for me, it's really important to kind of look at the last 50 years of the church in North America. And because we see cycles, of decline and you know, God scattering and disrupting.
Right.
We see signs of growth and hope. And so I think maybe a little conversation around kind of what the big areas are in the whole idea of church disruption and what we've seen the last 50 years maybe would be helpful as well.
Yeah, I think you're right, and you point a lot of that out in the book. One thing I see, and as a pastor, as we begin to talk about this, because we're going to be coaching leaders and walking alongside churches to try to get them to implement the idea of church scattered. And I think, you know, you talk about the rise of mega churches over that last 50 years. You see one of the major disruptions in the church world in the 70s and 80s, the rise of the megachurch. Now, before people think, okay, here they go, they're going to beat up on the megachurch, I pastor a multi-site megachurch right now that I deeply love and am committed to. Dan, your ministry has involved multiple megachurches, the one I was on staff on. So you're not at all saying that megachurches aren't a part of God's plan and that they're not used by God, but again, they're kind of a microcosm to be able to see what's going on. So in the megachurch world, which is still here, how did you see that as a disruption, Dan, and what can we learn historically from a few decades of the rise of the megachurch?
Well, we've talked, Chris, a lot about context and really context in the culture, context in the church. Those really force us to deal with issues, if you will, that will align us with our context to be more effective. And most people don't realize why God really created the megachurch movement. And I think this actually is one of those times where God was blessing, God was anointing, God was working in an unusual way. Well, why would he create the megachurch? You know, what was the positive side of that? What we really fail to think about is, you know, the urbanization of the world. And today, even in our day, there are 31 cities globally that have over 10 million people in population.
Right.
There are another 46 cities that have over 5 million people in population. So today, there are 76 cities worldwide that have over 5 million people. And when you think about North America even, you know, we're now over 80% of the people in North America live in an urbanized area.
Wow.
So if you're going to develop an effective strategy for reaching large numbers of people in these, you know, 5 million plus cities all over the world, the mega church is the platform that God wants to use to do that. And so that's really why, in my opinion, he raised it up. Now, clearly, it has had some issues to overcome. It still does. But I think it will be a vital role, you know, in moving forward to reach the world for Christ. And, you know, the sad part is I was working maybe 10 years ago, not on mega churches, 2,000 and up, but mega churches, 10,000 and up.
Right.
And we're going to have to build some of those. And the real focal point of what Church Scattered is saying, if you're thinking about how to reach 10,000, 20,000 people in an urban area like Atlanta or Los Angeles or New York or Chicago or New Delhi, India or Hong Kong or whatever, think about the whole dynamic that you're going to have to shift your prioritization of the gathered part of the church compared to the scattered part of the church. So,
right.
You can't build enough large buildings, to handle 20 to 30,000 people on one day a week for an hour. So the whole dynamic as we move forward about growing these very large churches, and I think God's going to continue to use them to reach the urban areas, is going to require a new methodology about the combination of gathered and scattered to make that effective.
I love that. So I think one thing, just speaking to all the pastors that may be listening here, and there's probably a lot of pastors that are going to tune in to this particular episode because we're talking church disruption. So I think that when you talk about the church scattered, and it's the name of the whole movement that we have here, it can come across initially as a threat. You know, okay, here we are trying to survive as a church, and you're telling me to scatter. But I think what the reason it feels that way, Dan, is because most churches, I would say, and I'm just going to throw out a number just in my own experience, I would say most churches spend 80% or more of their energy, their time, and their resources on the church gathered. It's the weekend, man, or it's the programs, it's the buildings. And we're not against any of those things, but it's going to feel like whiplash. But what we're doing is we're not saying ignore church gathered. What we're saying is if 80% plus of everything you do is about the church gathered, then number one, it's completely out of balance. And to move that back to more of a 50-50 type world, we're saying would totally transform the modern church. If we just move that needle there, but to do that, it's going to feel like we're just beating up on the church gathered. In reality, what we're doing is trying to become more biblical. Because if I look in the scriptures, what I see is an incredible balance between gathered worship and scattered mission for the church. Do you think maybe that's part of the pushback is that, man, you know, so much of our time and even the way we've learned and been taught in, you know, conferences and et cetera have been all about the church gathered. So it's going to feel a little like whiplash, Dan, but it's something that we're going to have to do.
Yeah, we are. And again, as people read through the book and listen to the podcast and, all the other ways we're trying to deliver content, the great news is we talked about the mega church and its ongoing role in reaching all these people in the urban areas of the world. The best news maybe of all of this, because I was a mega church leader that stepped on a lot of small churches, because to put it bluntly, they could not compete with our ability to do student ministry at such a high scale level. So the good news for the small church, and this is going to sound a little corporate, but competing in a gathered environment in a suburban area as a small church running 150 with a lot of large churches, that still puts you at a little bit of a competitive disadvantage. But as a small church in the church scattered, you have a competitive advantage because these three generations of people have distrust for big anything.
That's true.
And celebrity leader anything. So the good news for small churches today, if you will cast a vision around your people living out their faith every day, your size just went from, you know, something that would be viewed as a liability to something that is an asset. Because you can deliver biblical community at a more effective scale than a church running 2,000. So the good news for everybody here is, and you're right, initially it sounds like, you know, we're kind of losing people and, you know, we're you know, scattering them and empowering them. And, you know, how many pastors now are thinking about, will they ever come back? And, you know, the reality is we don't know.
Right.
But it's kind of like, you know, John, if they go out and they don't come back, you know, they were never right. really here. So, right. But the idea of empowering the church scattered, both for the large church and especially for the small church, puts you in a situation where you can maximize your impact through the Christians that are members of your congregation.
Yeah, absolutely. I see the same thing. And I think some verbiage that'll help. Number one, don't look at the word scattered, because I think in our vernacular, often in our culture, the idea of scattered typically has a negative connotation, right? When my wife looks at me and says, I feel like our family feels so scattered right now, that means we're overextended. That means we have too much going on. But when we talk about the church scattered, that is not at all what we're talking about. We're talking about a biblical concept of people living out their faith in their homes, in their businesses, in their workplace, in their schools, and in their churches. In order for that to happen, and what we're saying is for the 21st century to be a good and effective century for the church being faithful to the mission, that shift has to happen. It's got to happen, as painful as it may be. And in order to do that, I think we need some verbal handles. And one that I love that we use in the book, and we use it a lot in our coaching and in our consulting and all of that, is the idea of moving from payoff to setup. This has been huge for my own personal understanding, Dan, of church scattered, because I think typically we have seen the gathering of the church as the payoff. So it's almost like, you know, whatever happened all week long, it pales in comparison to what's going to happen when we finally get in the building. We're saying that not only is it biblical, it's far more effective to see Sunday or church gathered as a setup, and the payoff is what's going to happen the rest of the week. And let's be honest, our people spend less time today, you point out, than ever before in the church. Just 20, 25 years ago, people were willing to spend 5, 6, 7 hours a week in a gathered form at the church, small groups, events, etc. That has dropped dramatically to now more like a couple of hours tops, right? So we've got to make that shift. Dan, help us understand the terminology of setup and payoff and why we believe at Church Scattered that's going to be transformational for the future of the church.
Well, again, from a cultural standpoint, particularly in a large church world, we created this codependent culture. And the benefit for the church is being the payoff is that aligned with driving attendance, because the more attendance, the more you were paying off, the more value that was gained by coming. And so, you know, what lined up really, really well with these people showing up 6 to 8 hours a week, it was like we had the primary responsibility for spiritual formation in the lives of children and students. And so, you know, parents love that. And they would rather come and listen to you preach a marriage series and actually go home and change their marriage. So it worked for both groups of people, you might say.
Right.
But the culture, again, the context began to change. And to your point, attendance started dropping and the frequency of attendance started dropping, even among the most committed Christians. And so what began to happen with church leaders in the 90s, they began to say, wait a minute, you know, we're only getting these children maybe 2 to 4 hours a month
right.
at best, and the parents have an expectation that we have the primary responsibility for paying off their spiritual growth, and we've got to change that. So
now Dan, just to hit the pause button, so that strikes a chord. I was a youth pastor, you know, and I've been in that world, and I think student ministers, again, feel that pressure. That over time, the expectation of the church has not changed for children and student ministries. They still want a payoff, but they don't have enough time to do that. And you're saying that this shift will make all of that more healthy and, in our opinion, more biblical.
Well, it will. And, you know, thanks to Reggie Joyner and Orange and other groups of children's ministries that are supporting the church,
absolutely.
Basically now they're saying, okay, parent, you know, you've got to be primary. We will set you up for success. We will send things, you know, to you during the week, to talk about, you know, the topic of the day, the Bible study of the morning, so that you can pay it off around your kitchen table, because
yeah.
i.e. that's church scattered.
That's
and so
right.
parents have pretty much said, okay, we get it now. We understand that we've got to step into that primary role. and children's ministry and student ministry, you know, you're really setting us up. You're complementing us, but you're not primary any longer. We're assuming that responsibility.
Right.
The challenge for the church today, Chris, is we've not yet done that with adults. Because to do that with adults would impact the prioritization of the worship gathering, the prioritization of small groups, the prioritization of other methods of discipleship. And
metrics, again, not just methods, but it kind of goes at the way we measure. And again, it brings it back to the scorecard.
It does.
Right. If we continue to use the same metrics, we're going to keep white-knuckling, if you will, these old methods.
And what people need to hear, again, and the best way I can describe this for Church Scattered, we are adamantly uncompromising on biblical sacred truth.
Right.
We're not moving anywhere on the
gospel. We're Bible guys.
We're challenging people to move to the middle in their methodology. And what that simply means, the middle, is we're not devaluing anything. We're reprioritizing everything. So corporate worship, preaching, teaching, those are biblical gifts, and they add so much value, and so it's very important. Small groups is very important. You will gain spiritual maturity in small groups that you will find no other way as you use your spiritual gifts.
Right.
Today, what's become extremely popular in Bible church movement is that discipleship is done in life on life. And you will literally now hear the large gathering and the small groups is ultimately to push people into that one-on-one, one-on-three, life-on-life.
Right.
That's the way you become a mature Christian. The sad part of that for me biblically is what happened to the individual Christian with their Bible and the Holy Spirit.
Right.
I mean, the whole Reformation was about getting the Bible back to the people. And so we still fall in the trap that spiritual maturity requires someone else primarily to help you. And those other people are there in all three of those platforms, life on life, small group, worship gatherings. Those are extremely beneficial. However, not at the expense of you not owning your own personal spiritual growth.
So, Dan, as we look at disruptions historically in the church, and you were talking the past 50 years, let's just go back. So we talked about the rise of the megachurch in the 70s and 80s, and then a guy by the name of Rick Warren writes a book called The Purpose-Driven Church that really was a big deal. Looking back on it, it's even a bigger deal than we realized. Let's talk about what he did with multi-site and the way he was pushing the church forward and why it was such a big deal.
Well, the good news, you know, about Rick, to me is he's been so really solid for so long. He and I actually attended Fuller Seminary together, got a church growth, degrees there. And Fuller was a great place in the church growth movement because basically it was missionaries saying, okay, North America, you're getting ready to have to reach people in a cross-cultural strategy. And so, Rick literally took that and started Saddleback. And, you know, he wrote Purpose Driven Church. And, you know, there's some incredible truths in there. The things he was saying were pretty revolutionary. Church is more about health than growth. It's your sending capacity, not your seating capacity. And he would even say to people, we're not looking for transfer growth. And so, you know, he really changed everything from an intentional, purpose-driven strategy to make disciples.
Okay.
He did that both in the reaching of people who are lost. He did that in the baseball diamond with equipping Christians in a systematic way towards spiritual maturity. And you mentioned the pushback on Rick, quite honestly, I think, was because even though he was in California, he was still in North America. And so he was seen so outside the norm of what we were accustomed to. So you think about it, to your point, back then, multiple services was not a good thing.
Right.
It was assumed you became multi-congregational if you had multiple services, and how are you going to lead all these
and
people?
Don't you think that resulted in building massive facilities?
That is a part of it, no doubt about it. And the other thing, you know, he started in a school of all places with multiple services. So he was minimizing the need for that big building that you just talked about.
Right.
He dressed down in the pulpit. He was more of a teacher than a preacher, more application than exposition. Now, here's the bitter irony of all of that, and I lived through this very closely. If Rick had been a missionary in South America, right, he would have been celebrated as one of the greatest missionaries of all time.
Right.
But because he was leading his church in a missional way in North America, right, he was considered outside the box. And so, really, even to this day, in my opinion, he's not been appreciated for the disruptive, positive effect that he had on churches in North America.
Yep.
And you transition from him into the emerging church, and that's
Before you go to the emerging church, an interesting thing to me is, you know, because you and I both come from, we have a Reformed theological side to us as well, and that tribe was kind of one that beat up on Rick a lot, came at Rick, but because of the point you made, he seemed to be more application than expositional, and of course we have a deep love for expositional teaching. Interestingly, a few years ago, John Piper, who I think you and I both have a tremendous amount of respect for intellectually, theologically, sat down with Rick and literally at a table says to him, Purpose-Driven Life is an amazing book, theologically sound. And then he said this. Remember John Piper saying that Saddleback Church does one of the best jobs of discipling, making disciples of people than any church John Piper had ever seen. And it sent a shockwave through the reform world that one of their heroes, John Piper, was acknowledging Rick Warren, you know. And I think it's interesting, before we go into that emergent church, what Rick was saying several decades ago that he got pushed back on, he was basically prophetic in that it's what the entire nation is experiencing now. What he was seeing and kind of pivoting towards is what we are now all in the middle of. So very interesting. And then you said that the next shift kind of went to the emergent church in the mid-2000s.
Well, Dan Kimball basically went back and captured all the great truth that was in the church growth movement, which said North America is now a cross-cultural mission field.
Right.
And he challenged every pastor to become a missionary. He started talking, the original guy that I know that said we're over-prioritizing the place instead of being the people. And so he really got the attention focused again on the missiological part of this. And then, you know, now you think about it, you've got the megachurch movement exploding and all the conferences exploding. We're not really successful because we're looking at top-line revenue, if you will, attendance, rather than bottom-line results, which is profit, right, or making disciples. And right. So Tom Rainer comes along and writes Simple Church. And man, that was very helpful another corrective, really disruptive methodology approach. It basically said, hey guys, you're doing way too many things. You need to really simplify around three or four major priorities.
Right.
Get clarity around that. Communicate that to your leaders, your staff team, and your people, and walk away from everything else. And so,
talk about a disruption. That was disruptive.
Yes, it was. And so, it really though said to everybody that attends all these large church conferences that assumes one method fits all. That book basically said, no, you need to customize to your context and keep it simple, because simple is better.
Right.
And, you know, again, what a great contribution to church leaders. And, then, you know, the last pivot for me before church scattered was transformational church. And that's where he and Stutzer just absolutely nailed it all. They talked about the fact that, you know, we've got to be missional, we've got to be transformational, we've got to prioritize the gospel and not try to fix the culture. And oh, by the way, though, we need to engage the culture.
Yes.
And so the whole concept, again, of we need to be redemptive first and then restorative second, that really changed everything to me. Now, sadly, by the time transformational churches come along, there were so many other issues that were not really getting the attention of church leaders and Christians in the marketplace. And so for me, you think about it, the culmination of these whole 50 years of 1970s when the church growth movement started, right, and I went to Fuller and I was a corporate leader, as a Christian. And so Church Scattered really is a culmination of 50 years of Christian leadership. And chapter 3 says, how does that apply to the church? And where we started today was there are times in that 50 years where things were going really, really bad and we're not being very effective. And God gave a gift to the church, to me, of the church growth movement, to Rick Warren's purpose-driven church, to Rainer's work. And now here we are prayerfully with Church Scattered that says, okay, let's take all of that, put it into a new wineskin so right. that everything right. that comes from this point forward, we can all agree that will help us be more effective as small churches, large churches, creating partnerships and networks with corporate leaders to reach a city or a country somewhere else in the world. So all of this is beginning to reach a tipping point to me where we can develop a strategy and a framework that will align with the current reality of where we are. But also, as we keep talking about, Chris, the greatest opportunity, in my opinion, for Christians ever,
right.
that we have the ability now to leverage technology, to leverage globalization, to leverage urbanization, and use all of these factors to equip Christians to live out their faith every day.
Yeah, I you know, the picture that comes to mind for me is the Olympics when the guys do the pole vault. You know, they use that tool to leverage themselves over something that they could have never done on their own. And I think you can either look at the obstacle that the current situation affords us, or you can look at the tools God has given us that we can use as leverage. And that's what we're doing here at Church Scattered. We are deeply committed theologically to the Word of God, to the gospel, but we're also willing to change the methodology, and we think it has to change. And just to kind of bring it all back today, this has been such a fascinating conversation about kind of the history of how we got to where we are, and allowing all of that, as you said in Church Scattered, bringing these different methods together to meet the current challenge, which is unique in church history, but also unique in the opportunities it affords us. And again, I think if we bring it back, what we're saying to churches kind of overall, Dan, is don't be threatened by the idea of Church Scattered. This is a great opportunity to unleash the power of your people. It's going to feel like we're swinging the pendulum, but really all we're doing is bringing it back to what we would consider a biblical place where you're spending just as much energy and resources and time on the church gathered as you are on the church scattered. They even out, and that's going to make a huge change. And I think the terminology I love is we're trying to move church gathered from being the payoff to be in the setup. What will it look like if when people walk out of the doors of our buildings on Sundays, they don't feel like a period has been put at the end of the sentence? It's just a comma. And the real story begins when they walk out of the buildings, not when they walk into them. And when we begin to unleash our business leaders and our moms and dads in their homes, and our people begin to own their personal walks with God, now we have a true transformation on our hands. So as we land the plane on that idea, Dan, what's one last thing you would say to church leaders listening to this, how maybe tomorrow they could begin to implement the idea of changing from being a payoff to a setup?
Well, I think, again, what I do just in a practical sense when I'm consulting with churches or coaching with churches, and I get to a whiteboard and I draw a vertical line in the middle of the board. And I say, okay, let's think of some of the things that we're planning
right.
for the rest of this year that are going to occur in the church gathered context, whether they're service, sermon series, or whether they are small groups, or whether they're children's events,
yeah,
whatever
right.
it is. And then I'll say, okay, let's look at the right-hand side of the board. What are we intentionally planning and equipping to empower our people to do in the
right.
church scattered? And most of the time, there is a long pause because there's really not an intentionality. And think about it, though. If for example, like Three Circle, you would immediately need to put all of your small group adult ministry in the scattered side of the board.
Right.
I mean, it's already scattered.
Absolutely.
But we don't think about it that way. We think about it just as an extension of the gathered, but actually it's scattered. It's occurring out there, not in the building.
Yep.
And then if you think about all the clinic work you're doing, that's a scattered context.
Right.
You think about, you know, everything you're doing missionally that I see, you know, as a church, that's in the scattered context. So if you would just change your framework about what is happening off the campus that is ministry that we are leading to help be effective, you can begin to start fill that in. Mm-hmm. And then you can say to yourself, okay, what are some potentially of the things that we're doing on the left-hand side of the board that are requiring capacity, time, energy, and effort that we might shift to the right-hand side of the board?
That's good.
And it could be something as simple, Chris, as okay, the next marriage conference, rather than holding it in this building, why don't we hold it in a civic center in downtown Mobile?
Right.
That just literally took the same event, put it in a scattered context where it will be easier for unchurched people to connect with and probably would be more effective, in my opinion, overall in your strategy.
Makes sense. So those are just some simple things. And again, we hope today's podcast was helpful as we dive into chapter by chapter. We're walking through the book. But if you want the book, you can find Church Scattered by Dan Greer at Amazon and other outlets. And also, you can go to our website, churchscattered.com. This is a movement that we've started. We're excited about it. We are doing coaching, individual coaching, our team, whether you're a business person, whether you're just a person wanting to walk with God more closely, or whether you're a church leader. We have coaching for all of that. You'll find all of that at our website. You can pick up the book. Also, stay in touch on all the social media platforms, Church Scattered on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We got a Facebook Live that we'll be coming out with here pretty soon, so just stay tuned to all of that. There's a lot of different ways you can connect to this movement. And what really, Dan, we want to do is we want to help churches and business leaders and homes become more effective as Christians in the 21st century. And we believe to do that, there's going to have to be some changes. So I'm personally excited as a local church leader to begin to change from being the payoff to the setup. I think it's going to transform the church I lead, Dan, Three Circle Church. So Dan, thank you so much for joining us today for the podcast. Check us out at churchscattered.com. And until next time, let's continue living out our faith outside of the church and inside of the church to the glory of God. We are Church Scattered.